Hi, I'm Lulu, and I'm an alcoholic. I am not a public speaker, and so just bear with me. I know some of you guys from when I was 16 and sitting in those chairs and hating life and questioning why I was here and why this was happening to me. Fast forward, I'm still here and I'm grateful every day for it. Just a little bit about me since we'll be together for the next 3 weeks. I got sober when I was 21. My sobriety date is April 25th, 2018. I just celebrated 3 years and I'm grateful. Like, it's totally different from when I first started. I came to the rooms when I was 16 years old after doing a stunt in rehab and then another stunt in an outpatient. And that's where I was introduced to AA in my terms. I grew up with both parents in the room, so I knew what AA was and I hated it. And I didn't understand it, and I had big books all over my house, and all I knew was just the big books that you don't touch, like those you don't touch. So I came to a meeting, I was handed a big book, and I was like, oh, it's okay, I already have one, because they gave you them in rehab. And I didn't touch it in rehab at all, except when we had like our workshops. Came to a meeting, he gave it to me again. They were like, they wouldn't let me say no. They were just like, no, you have to have it. And I was like, all right, just stop talking to me, you're scaring me. I took it, and that was that. Went to that meeting again, and this random person came up to me, and they're like, oh, did you go through the big book? And I go, oh, yeah, I did. It was great. It was just like lying to like a teacher. Like, it was like, you know, when like you have like a book report and you are just like wanting to know all the answers. I was in high school, so I thought the big book like had like a spark notes that I can look up online, and there was it. And so like that's what I did. I kind of just was like, all right, let me just get the summary of it. And I would read, I read the last page of like the first 164 pages, like of every chapter. I was like, all right, got that. There's a doctor's opinion, there's a Bill's story, like got it, great. And then I would go into meetings and I would share on only the last page. That didn't keep me sober for very long. Lucky enough, I had people in the rooms that knew that I was a nutcase and that I needed to be watched, I guess, and taken to meetings with young people because I couldn't really relate to... divorces or DUIs when the problems in my life was not going to prom or not getting asked out after the football game, you know, so I couldn't relate. So I had to find, in order to keep me sober, I had to find young people in this program. And that's what I did. I ventured out of Westfield where I grew up and I found a great meeting about 45 minutes away with a bunch of young people who were crazy and miserable that they were young and sober and just didn't know how to have fun. So we figured out how to have fun in the rooms. And once I learned that I could have fun here, I was down to read the big book and actually read it and not just like find out what the main points were of it. So that's what we're just going to do, I guess, the next 3 weeks, is just find out what's in this book that resonated with me and that I think of on a daily basis to keep me sober. And yeah, if you guys can't hear me, I'll use this thing, just let me know.
You're good?
Okay, cool. So I always, with my sponsees, I always just have them write down their sobriety dates. This is the big book I got when I was 16 years old, and I have all my sobriety dates in it with, listen, I'm not a winner, but I feel a winner every day. And that's just important to me. And I like to look at that to remind myself that, you know, I had to work. And, you know, through all the relapses and everything, like, I would lose my apartment keys. I would lose my wallet. I would lose, like, everything. But I never lost my big book. Like, how does that make sense, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I could not keep a job, but I kept this random book that I did not even read. Like, it made no sense to me. So I don't really know the exact format that you guys are looking for, so I'm just kind of put my own little twist on it. I'm sorry. But I just like to go to the doctor's opinion, like, right away. That's just, for me, like, where it all just started to click once I was ready. So pretty much, like, this contains two letters. The first is like, with Bill. And if you go to the, so it's, like, XXV. If you go to the second paragraph where it says, in the late 1934. So in late 1934, I attended a patient who thought he had been a competent businessman of good earnings and capacity, was an alcoholic of a type I had no regard, that I come to regard as hopeless. Okay, so I'm not the best at reading, but all I know is that this guy was a businessman, and he had, like, you thought he had his stuff together, good earnings, but Dr. Silkworth was like, no, this dude's hopeless. That's me as an alcoholic. That's my journey, you know? Like, I had my stuff together. I was able to stay in school. I was able to not always keep my jobs, but I was always able to get a next job right away where I was never, like, out of money. So I thought I had it to get, like, I was good, you know? But I was hopeless. That was just going to be the rest of my life of me just drinking and messing things up, but then just always saving my butt. So to me, this short, like, little paragraph is just, you're literally the king. He's the king of just BS. Like, that's, you're just saying that this guy can BS anyone, but he's hopeless. How does that make sense to me? Okay, you can look at anyone, let's say, like, on social media. Let's say, like, I don't know, Beyonce, you think her life's great. She's getting cheated on, you know? Like, no one's life is as great as you think, as it makes it look. And I never related to, like I said, people getting DUIs or divorce or anything, but I related to having my life look so good on the outside, but on the inside it was falling apart to the, like, I couldn't even manage it anymore. But I kept going. So if you just, like, keep reading, I have, like, you know, it just goes on and on and just says that, like, there's mental defects and the alcoholics. And then it gets, if you go to page XXVIII, we talk about this allergy, and that's where that's introduced. So when I read that, I'm saying, okay, so I am allergic to alcohol. That makes no sense. When you go to a doctor and they stick you with those needles and you have an allergy test, you know, it pops up. And then the doctor says, okay, you know, you're allergic to peanuts. No more peanuts for you. That's it. But for me, if I'm allergic to alcohol, why do I still want alcohol? Why do I still don't care that I'm allergic to it? And that was something that I had to think about for a while. Like, how am I allergic to it? What does that mean? You know, and having an allergy to something is just having an abnormal reaction to what other people have. You know, when I drink, I don't know when the next, like, that when I'm going to stop. It's not just a one drink and, you know, it was a great time. It's, I'm going to keep going, but we're not, I don't really know when it's going to end. That's the obsession. The allergy is that I'm wanting it more and more and more, and I can't stop. So for me, the whole line right here, I have it, like, underlined in a million notes about it, is that we believe and so struggle and suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of cravings is limited to the to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So the first thing we know is that I have an allergy. Great. Second thing is that I'm going to have the cravings that I'm going to have for it are, like, limitless. And I just look at myself and I'm like, is that true? I mean, I didn't think I had an allergy at the time when I was reading this, but I knew that my cravings were nonstop, and I knew that I necessarily didn't act how other people acted when they drank. You know, I was a blackout drinker from the age of 13. No 13-year-old is blacking out at Shabbat dinner. Like, that was my life for many years, unfortunately. And so when I, like, started to read these lines, and I had to go line by line. I couldn't go, like chapter by chapter, because I had to absorb it. I had to, and that's how I bring my sponsees through it. We go page, line by line, whatever needs to be done, so I can see that the wheels are turning, that you're like, it's clicking, you know? And that's like what happened, you know? I had a sponsee. I had a sponsor, and I was her sponsee. She wasn't my best friend, and that was our relationship, you know? And I wanted her to be my best friend, because if she was my best friend, I could bullshit her. Sorry. I can BS her through this whole, like, I don't know, this whole process, you know? That wasn't the case. We, for, like, a full, like, year and a half, my Fridays and Saturdays were gone. They were devoted to this book, and my time was devoted to her and to this program. And with that, I learned what my allergy was. I learned why my cravings were limitless. I learned, you know, and even when I put down the drink, I still had the cravings, you know, and I didn't understand that. And I asked her, and I was like, well, what's, like, why do I still have the cravings? Like, when are they going to go away? If I'm 90 days sober, why am I still craving it, you know? Like, if I'm craving cake, if I sit 2 hours without the cake, I'm not really craving it anymore. But with alcohol, I will crave it for hours, for days, and I get miserable, and I'm nasty to everyone. I hate everyone. I hate everyone. And that's the case. Like, that's just how it is. And I didn't understand that, and it took a lot of hard work. And we'll get through, like, we'll talk about the steps and all the actions, but really, to me, like, you know, you go through the big book, and, you know, this is the program to me, the big book, you know, it's like step one and two, that's the preparation for the work. I thought one and two, like, were the work. I didn't, you know, because, you know, then we'll talk about step one if we go to, sorry. I have it somewhere all lined out in here. But I, you know, it's funny, I'm looking at my pages right now, and I really don't ever go through them that much anymore. But my language has changed. You know, I have a lot of cursing in one color, which I think I wrote when I was probably 16. And then this time, I have a lot of things underlined and highlighted in more, like, appropriate language. And that just shows that, you know, I grew in this program. I grew in this book. And that's what you do in this program, you know. Like, you're not just gonna stay hopeless and broken the whole time. You know, you're gonna, things are gonna click, you know. And so when I, like, look at the first step, and it says, you know, the first step to me, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. That's, to me, is all about truth. Like, what's the truth? The truth is, I'm powerless. I knew it. There was, and that was, I was a very prideful person. I was like, I can control everyone in my life. I can control all the outcomes, but I couldn't control what alcohol did to me. And I couldn't control what I did to other people with alcohol in my system. And that was what scared me the most, you know. And then, you know, it was unmanageable. So truth and fact seeking right there. Like, it was so unmanageable that I just decided to cut people out because I was tired of apologizing to them. But admitting that you're powerless when you have everything on the outside looking so good. I was in school. I was getting decent grades. I was involved in, like, you know, I was working. I had good relationships, you know. That was hard to admit that I couldn't manage that and I was powerless to all, like, you know. So once I did that, that was the work. That was it for me. And then I was sadly looked at the step two and I realized, no, that's not how it goes. So then I came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us sanity. That was a hard pill to swallow. And it was painful and I didn't like it. I remember, like, I wanted to just, like, never see my sponsor again after she, like, started talking to me about step two. It just wasn't for me. It really wasn't for me. Like, power greater than myself and, like, we're just gonna start to talk about God. And I was just like, that's not how it's gonna work. Like, is there another route? Like, I literally was looking for, like, detours to finish the 12 steps. And that just wasn't obviously available. So I pretty much told my sponsor at the time, I said, hey, the power greater than me thing, I can't get with it. If this is the main thing, like, I'm out. And, like, she laughed in my face. And I was like, that's freaking rude. Like, I'm, like, telling you, like, I just can't do it. And she, like, laughed. And I was like, I'm kind of serious. Like, I just can't. She's like, oh, I know you're serious. That's why it's funny. And I was like, okay, well, we'll never be speaking again. And and I'm, like, going to her bridal shower, like, in 2 weeks. It's great. But, so she told me, she was like, well, why? And I was like, what do you mean, why? I don't need to explain myself to you. Like, and she's like, actually, you kind of do. Like, if we're on your sponsee. And I go, well, why? Like, how am I supposed to believe in God? I was like, how do you expect someone to believe in God when they're, like, 16 going through the program? And she goes, you're 16 going through a program. How are you not supposed to believe in God? And I was just like, all right, like, I've been in therapy my whole life. Like, I know this. Like, we're not playing this game. And I just got so mad at her. And, you know, that was it. And, we never really, like, I just stayed in the program after that step for about a year and a half, which is crazy. I obviously went out, I came back, got back to step two this time, and I had a new sponsor, and she said the same thing to me, so I called my old sponsor, hoping she would have, like, a different answer, like, it's 8 years later, like, maybe there's something different, and she just goes to me, she goes, what do you want in a best friend? And I go, like, I don't know. I don't care. Like, you know, like, who thinks about, like, what they want in a best friend? And so she's like, just make a list and text it to me in the morning. And I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And I was like, okay, like, this is my list. And she's like, all right, just keep that list and we'll just move on to step three. And I was just like, okay, like, don't really think I just did the step two you talk about, but okay. And so we moved on to step three, and that's when I saw, like, God. And I was just like, you know, it says, okay, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to care of God as we understood him. Okay, God and him, no God for me. Him, I hate boys. Like, that was my thinking. I was mad. I was like, okay, like, I'm not even doing this right. Like, I'm gonna relapse because I didn't do step two right, and now we're just jumping to step three. And we sat down in a park, and she goes, okay, where's your list with your best friend? And I was like, oh, yeah, well, here it is. Like, it was like five bullet points of what I want in a best friend. And she goes, why can't that be your God? And I go, well, it's not God, it's a best friend. And for me, it took time to understand that God isn't a God that we learn about in religion, and it doesn't need to be a him or a her. And that scared me for probably, I want to say, about 6 months in the program, that I thought that I took the words of this book so literal that I only thought God was to like God, and it had to be a him, and that was, you know. So when we started to, I guess, bend the rules to make it fit to my own belief, that's when I was like, I got scared. And when I got scared, I realized that I actually cared. I cared about my sobriety. I cared about the work that I was doing in this book. And from there, I mean, the rest was like, the rest just started to make sense. Like, I did 1, 2, and 3 with that sponsor. I found what God was to me. I felt comfortable with it. I felt I could trust it because it was made up of things that I desired in someone. And with that, I was able to do the next steps that were the hard work, essentially. So that's really was like my journey through the first 3 steps of this program, going through it so young and so wild. You know, I didn't know who I was as a person completely. I started this program 16 and angry at everyone and scared. You know, I was terrified of being here. I was terrified of being vulnerable. And I was terrified because I grew up in this town with a family member in the rooms that was very, like, a good person of the program. And I was like, oh, great. Like, I have to, like, be a soldier now. And, you know, I would... Oh, he's going to hear this tape, right? Well, I would come to the meetings and I would, you know, go in the back... And I would get high and I would come out. And that was my life, you know. I couldn't do it. It was too much pressure. And there was no saving me. And that was just it. There was no saving me. So if I just had to show up for an hour, I remember this one being an hour and a half. And I was like, this is different. This is throwing me out of whack. And, you know, it changed. I went through the steps. I understood the steps. I made the steps work for me. You know, that's what you have to do. You have to find the program. You have to find the steps, find the right sponsor, but make it work for you. Make it work in your life, you know. This isn't just a one size fits all, you know. It's one size, but you got to, like, you know, clip it and sew it and, you know, alter it to make it fit. And that's what I did. And by doing that, you know, I wake up every day praying to my higher power, grateful that I, like, am here, you know, grateful that I'm sober. The fact that I'm young and sober, I don't have any resentments towards that now, like today. I don't wish I was, you know, older and have more time to have fun, quote unquote, you know. I'm happy that I, like, quit at a young age, and that only happened because of this book and because of everyone here. So, good? More?
Go more?
Okay, cool. So then, I mean, I don't really know what else I should say besides the fact that, can I go into, like, the 4 step?
Yeah.
You sure? Okay.
Yeah, you can go.
All right, so then 4 step. Okay, cool. So 4 step. I have a lot to say on this. I am a 4 step relapser. It has happened more than once, so I give myself that term. I thought 1, 2, and 3 were, like, a lot of hard work. It was pulling teeth. When I actually had to physically, like, make a list, like, I was out. it just wasn't for me, and it wasn't going to happen. That the fact that I had to make a list, and this list was somehow going to tell me what was wrong with me, I didn't like that. So I pretty much just like got the papers from my sponsee, and then I was like, all right, great, I'll do this, I'll see you in like 2 weeks. And I never saw her again, and I still haven't spoken to her. But like, I see her at meetings and we do the little nod, so we like are kind of civil. But yeah, the 4 steps scared me so much that I was like, I will drink on this. First of all, I didn't even know what it was like to do an inventory. You know, what I knew that I was perfect and it was everyone else's issue, and that was, you know, it was them, it wasn't me. That was like kind of my way of thinking always, you know, like, oh, I got caught drinking in school. Well, like, they shouldn't have gone through my locker. That's invasion of privacy. Or I got the worst, I mean, not the worst thing, but when I was younger, this is the worst thing that happened. I was suspended from cheerleading in this town because I dropped a girl. Well, I always drank at practice, and I think she just gained a few pounds, is what I told them. And that didn't go over well, so then I was, like, I sat out. And I was like, oh, well, maybe that's, like, a problem. Like, but I was like, I don't think that's my problem. So that's really what my inventory, you know, consisted of. People doing me wrong over things that were obviously me. And that's pretty much what an inventory is, if you break it down. You know, no, like, making it sound anything better. It's, you know, you make your inventory, people. And my first inventory wasn't that long. It was probably about a page. And my sponsor looks at me, and she just goes, like, did you just do this? Or, like, did you, like, actually work on it? And I was like, oh, no, like, I, like, worked on it. Like, I did it, like, a few nights ago. And she goes, she's like, I know you're an angry person. Like, you can write more. And I go, she goes, I know you're an angry person. Like, are you just being lazy? Yeah. And I go, no. And she goes, go back and write more. And I was like, what? Like, and, you know, I wrote more. I wrote everyone. I did it the most millennial way you could, is if I thought I forgot something, I went through my phone contacts, like A to Z. Then I went through Facebook, and, you know, Facebook brought it back a lot of things. And so I literally, and I would be like at lunch, like in public school, like on my phone, like going like this, like writing in this journal, and it looked weird, you know? But that's where my 4-step was. My 4-step was in the contacts of my phone, you know, everything that I forgot, all those like text messages, you know, I would just search one word, like, and I would be like, all right, like, I would search Rob. And so, like, people that robbed me, I put them down, you know, and that's how my 4-step came about. It was just, you know, I had to, again, that's me making the program work for me. I wasn't going to be able to just sit there and write everyone's, you know. But when I started to make it work for me and I started to understand why I was writing these names, I saw a freaking pattern. And I, like, and then that just, like, I was done when I saw the pattern, because it didn't make me feel good. And usually, if I didn't feel good, I would go out and have a drink. So now I'm like, I'm have some time now, and I don't feel good. What do I do? And so I call another alcoholic right away, and I'm just like, I'm pissed. Like, I don't think this is right. Like, I literally asked my friend to look at my forceps because I just thought I was being too hard on myself. And she's like, no, like, that's what happened. Like, I was there and I was sober. And I go, all right, whatever. Like, I'm done with you. And then that was, like, on my forcep. So I stopped asking people to look at my forcep because when they told me that it was true, they just got added to it. And that's a really great way to make it grow. And, you know, I sat on it. Like, I was scared. It's so terrifying going up to another person being like, yeah, I'm kind of shitty. Here's my forcep. Like, but I want to be sober. And that's what I felt like I was doing. I didn't see it as getting honest. I just thought it as being, like, vulnerable and being, like, somewhat weak. And that's something I had to learn, that those two don't go side by side. Being vulnerable and weak are not the same. Like, they aren't, you know? And so I was like, what is this? Like, I'm not supposed to feel this way by doing the work. Something's wrong. And what was wrong was how I was looking at myself. So then I just went back to the big book like I always did. Not always did, but I learned to do. So, you know, I had my list and I looked at it. And then when I got to affects my, I just went down. And it was, you know, so we have here, like, page 65, if you guys want to go there. What I just have down is, I'm resentful at, okay, Mr. Brown, the cause, his attention to my wife, told my wife of my mistress, Brown may get my job at the office. When I read that, I was like, no, like, okay, like, that's not my life again. This is not going to work for me. So I sat here in, like, you know, my room, and I just, like, with my little highlighter, and I just, like, all right, how am I going to make this work for me? So just like my big book, in my force, like, I didn't, like, I carry it with me. Like, this is, you know, pages right here. And this is the one from this year. It's all right. It happens. But I had to make it work for me. So I grew with my forestep, you know, when I never really made new ones. I made a new one this year just because I honestly just was over carrying it around. But I had the forestep I started when I was 16 all the way down to when I was 21. So when I was 16, I would say, I'm that, like, I'm resentful at blah, blah, blah. It'd be like my coach, the cause, sitting me out, making me look bad, you know, affects my self-esteem. And I was fearful and, like, that, like, you know, it was horrible. I didn't like the fact that I was sitting on the sidelines and that no one was looking at me, and that, because I was sitting out, I didn't, like, have fun. It was a waste of, I could have been home drinking. She was ruining my drinking time, if you come down to it. I could have been home drinking. Instead, I had to be outside at Keller Stadium with everyone looking happy. Like, how dare you? That's how I thought, and that's not right. I know that now. But that was my forcep. You know, it started with little high school things, but those were my life. And then as I got older, they got realer. So I was mad at my employer. Yeah, because he gave another girl a raise over me. What did that affect? I was not going to have any money, and I needed money to supply my, like, habit. Like, again, I felt like people were coming for me. And it wasn't like before ever doing this, when someone did something bad to me, I never, you know, just let it go. Like, I got, like, even. And I would, like, I would do some disgusting, like, horrible things to people. My employer, like, he's great. I'm friends with him to this day. But when I didn't get the job I wanted, I cursed him out. I, like, literally, like, raged, like, hellfire on him, his family. Like, I brought his little, like, 2-year-old daughter into it. Like, the craziest things. And now, like, I babysat for that little girl, like, a million times. It's, like, it's just when you're so in it and you feel like these attacks are made so personal, like, I'm vicious. Like, I will destroy you. Especially if you get into, like, my way of my drinking. Like, if you're, like, I don't care who you are. Like, live your life. I'll live mine. If you come for my drinking, like, I'll come for your neck. And that's really, like, how it was. And so my four-step was a lot of that. A lot of people that came for my drinking that stood in the way of it. A lot of people that hurt me personally. And I didn't know, like, how to be honest about it. It was one thing to write it, but to be honest about it with another alcoholic, I wasn't really... I didn't think you guys were as fucked up as me. And that's where I struggled. And that's why I would relapse on this step multiple times. It's because I was so scared to say, yeah, my self-esteem was hurt. Yeah, like, my personal relations were ruined. Yeah, like, you know, my pride. I was scared to say I was scared. Like, I just didn't think you guys would understand. And so I was like, I'd rather drink than open up to someone about this. And that's what I did. And it didn't get better. And I came back and I did it again. And it was a broken cycle until I finally was, I knew I was done. I was so broken. I was so sick. I couldn't walk. I literally couldn't even, like, feed myself that this last time that I was just like, all right, I'll tell you whatever you want to hear. I literally will tell you everything, every disgusting thing, everything that I didn't even write down, I will tell you if it means that I won't feel this way anymore. And that's, like, that's what I had to feel, and, like, just to get with this program. I had to have felt the pain that I felt and the desperation that I felt to just, like, be honest. And by doing that, I didn't have this, like, white, like, magical moment where, like, Morgan Freeman's voice came in and it was, like, everything. Like, I didn't have that. Like, I just had, like, all right, four steps done. That was it. That pissed me off so much. I just did all this work. I relapsed on this step. I was honest, and I'm still not feeling, like, 110%. I was like, I would love to write this program off. I was like, this is false advertisement. Like, I literally wanted, like, every dollar I ever put back in the basket back. I was so mad. And then, because I just thought, like, you do, like, your four, everyone talks, the four steps, the hardest one. Like, you know, like, that's what I always heard. And I was like, but why? Like, I did it, and I was so honest, and I was, and I cried, and I was like, and I was like, I cried, and I was honest, and I even, like, told him things I wasn't even going to tell her. Like, it was everything, and it was, I still didn't feel fixed, and I was mad. So I told my sponsor, I was like, yeah, listen, don't think this is going to work. Sorry, you're wasting your time. She goes, well, what are you going to do? And I was just like, yeah, I just don't know. But, like, she's like, what, are you going to drink? And I go, no, like, I just don't think this is going to work for me. And she's like, you don't think it's going to work for you, but you're not going to drink. And I go, I don't feel like drinking. I'm just mad because I'm still upset. I'm still hurt. And she goes, but you're not going to drink. And that's when it clicked. It wasn't going to be this whole, like, magical butterfly feeling. It was just the fact that I didn't want to drink. I needed to hold on to that and know that that was important to me. And once I realized that, I was, you know, like, I just felt so much better. I felt something was actually going right in my life, that something, after all these meetings I sat in and all these big books meetings that I went to and meeting with my sponsor and all these, like, you know, AA extracurricular activities I was doing, like, it was starting to click. And that was only because I was hopeless, I knew I was powerless, and I was honest. Mm-hmm. And I prayed to God almost every day because I knew that there was something that was going to break me. I knew that if I just kept going on my own, that if I was just going to be broken. And I already felt broken, so I was so scared to see how more broken I could get. And then, I mean, that was really it for me with my four-step. It took a lot of tries. It took a lot of paper, but I got through it. And now it's something that it's done daily to me, with me, you know? I don't have to write it out. I can just mentally think on it real quick and just be like, yikes, okay, we'll fix that. And that's a gift of sobriety, that I can take this thing that used to take me countless relapses and I can think on it on my feet real quick about it. Like, that doesn't happen, you know? And I had to read the book numerous times, over and over again. Just, okay. Was I that loud? Just so I could, get it. You just have to get it and make it work for you. Because mm-hmm. I wasn't going to relate to a wife and a mistress. But I would relate to, getting cheated on or getting your heart broken, and I would definitely relate to someone getting in the way of my drinking. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. You know, I went through this book, I highlighted and picked things out that stood out to me and that I related to, and that's what I focused on. And that's what I kept doing every day to keep being a member of this program and keep being on this journey to better myself and to better, you know, the next women that I sponsor and the woman that she sponsors and so forth and so forth. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Great job.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.